All right, sir.
So briefly, we exchanged a couple of emails, but here's what I'm trying to understand. I was in Afghanistan last year for about a few weeks, and I've done a few stories on the economy, on security, and so on. But one of the stories I was really interested in, broadly in, under the umbrella of the economy, was to understand how well the country's infrastructure is being developed. And a railway, as you know, is an important part of that. So I had an opportunity to go to Mazar-e-Sharif and to Hyalotan with the Asian Development Bank, which has funded that short segment of railway up in the north, to just kind of see how this is functioning, and the Uzbek company that's sort of helping run, operate, and maintain that line at this moment. And I also met with a deputy minister in the Public Works Ministry, kind of broadly, to get a sense of, you know, what their ideas are in terms of developing the railway. But the reason I wanted to speak with you, and I wish I had done this earlier, is to kind of get a sense from you as to, you know, what the plans are and what the obstacles are in developing what seems to be an interest in the country to have a pretty large network of railway, which is essential to them as they see it, because of it's important in moving minerals and materials out of the country to not only, you know, countries in the north to connect to the railway line there, but also to the east of Pakistan and west of Iran. So with just that is just sort of a very broad overview. I wanted to get a sense from you, if you can maybe give me a sense of, you know, what you do and where things stand in terms of development of a broader countrywide railway network.
All right. At any time, stop me. I'll try to give you a broad overview of the direction that Afghanistan is heading, and then some of the assistance that my team has been doing, and the two teams before us, and all of our strategic partners that we work with. Over the last 3 years, our team, the embassy, and CENTCOM have all worked together with Afghanistan to create a comprehensive railway plan for them. And it was based on economic modeling of where are the mines, you know, where do we think the minerals are going to go, in what direction to be exported, and then what would be the most efficient way to get there. I'm sure as you've seen in a lot of their economic plans, you know, the extractive minerals industry is what they're really leaning on to build their economy. And then with your coal and iron ore, and then in some respect the copper, you need a rail industry to bring that to market, because you can't have a lot of expenses if you're going to compete in the global marketplace, especially with players like South Africa and Australia. So the comprehensive...
You seem to be breaking up a little bit. Do you mind maybe getting a little closer to the microphone?
Okay. Is this any better?
Oh, this is a lot better, yes.
It's a lot better. Okay. Do you want me to start over here?
No. I just only missed the last few words.
Okay. So they have to be able to bring their minerals to the global marketplace and be competitive with their prices. So if they don't have a robust rail industry, Afghanistan's not going to be able to compete, and therefore they're not going to be able to sell their product. So with that said, we are taking a lot of steps concurrently to assist Afghanistan in developing a rail industry. One, of course, is the rail plan. And then right now we're focusing on up north with that line from Turkmenistan and Tajikistan to link them together. But then the line that will go from Bamiyan and go down south and take the minerals down to the ports, down in Chabahar and through Iran. Afghanistan itself is positioned in the middle of many different rail gauges. To the north, you have the Russian gauge. To Iran has a standard gauge, and then Pakistan has what we call a broad gauge. So the gauges that Afghanistan chooses clearly impact their neighbors. Several things that we are working with to help develop Afghanistan and to help them stand up on their own. They've created the Rail Authority, and the first rail team really got that off the ground in 2011 and 2012. Now they have employees of it. our team on the ground up north is actually doing a lot of training with the Afghans, and we call it bridge training or short-term training. We're trying to give them enough knowledge so when we build a systematic training program that we will hand to Afghanistan, and Afghanistan will manage it and run it. You know, they're self-sustaining once the coalition leaves. They can continue to grow their knowledge base of their industry. And then we're working with some of the international donors to see what we can do to facilitate getting portions of the track built.
Right. Now, in all of this planning, one of the things that I was looking for the name of the gentleman, the deputy minister told me that there is a broad plan to build as much as 3,600 kilometers of railway. It's a 25-year plan. This is what Ahmad Shah Wahid, the Afghanistan's deputy minister for public works, told me when I was there. Is that something that's embedded into the long-term planning that you and your colleagues there with allies are doing, or is that something that's different?
No, that's actually embedded as part of the greater plan for Afghanistan.
So 3,600 is kind of like the goal.
Yes, sir. And it'll be two distinct rail lines. You have a northern line, which will connect all of the coalition of independent states. Then you'll have a southern line that'll take most of the extractive minerals out of the country.
Right. And what is the kind of timeline that this will kind of play out in? I mean, is it because there's already something that's existing in the north? I'm assuming north would be sort of priority, or is it because of the focus on minerals, south is more of a priority? Which is a priority?
Let me see if I can ask that question again so I understand it. You're looking for timelines
priorities? Yeah, you said the northern and the southern. I'm kind of asking the question, which one of the two is a priority in terms of developing first?
Well, I don't know if the northern line is a priority to be developed first, but because the Asian Development Bank under the CAREC program, which is Central Asian Regional Economic Cooperation, is pushing to have the TAT line built, which is the Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Tajikistan line, because that's, you know, there's a commitment for funding and the detailed engineering study has already started. You know, that line seems to be the first one that's really going to be built after, you know, in extension to the 75 kilometers that they have. The southern line, which is the line that's really going to support their extractive minerals industry, has not been started. It remains a plan on a piece of paper.
And in terms of the funding, I mean, the one thing that when I was speaking with ABD, they said was, you know, it's not, I mean, it's obviously a very expensive project to build, you know, all of these planned railway network. But they didn't have sort of like a budget or a proposed spending. Is there a dollar figure that says here's how much we need to spend in order to create this 3,600, you know, kilometers of railway?
More than you and I have in our wallets, my friend.
of course, yeah.
No, there's not a budget. There's not a number on the wall right now. And that's where, you know, up north right now, you know, they're doing the detailed study on how much that's going to cost. And then the southern line, again, they're going to have to do that. But the number is easily in the tens of billions of dollars, which, you know, Afghanistan doesn't have, and I'm pretty sure that Asian Development Bank isn't going to just give them that. So what we have recommended they do is, with all the tenders that the Ministry of Mines are always putting out, whether it's for another coal or iron ore or copper, is they attach building a section or funding a section of the rail with that tender, very much like they do with schools and power plants and other infrastructure projects.
So this is the companies that bid for these mineral extraction exploration would then have to bid for a segment, including the building of the railway, right? So what you're saying?
That's what we've recommended to Afghanistan.
They have done that in the case of the iron ore, in the case of iron ore in Hajikak, which the Indian consortium has bid and won, and then they've done it, I think, in the case of the copper mines in INAC as well. But in talking with these two, I mean, we haven't really talked much with the Chinese consortium, but we've talked some with the Indian consortium. One of the things they are saying is, look, yeah, we bid for it, but the railway, it's difficult for us to do this. It's just, one, it's expensive, and, you know, they are talking about security. And they're saying, now they're saying, we want the Afghan government to provide the infrastructure. And by that, they mean, you know, the railway. So it's like, you know, both sides are saying, you do it first. So is that a good model from what you see so far?
I think that, you know, Jeroa will have to build it, but I think it's going to have to be funded from these tenders. So like the SAIL consortium, I think they agreed to 200 kilometers of rail. It could have been 500, but I think it's 200. The Chinese agreed to build a rail line from Anya Copper Mine up to Hariton to connect into the line, but it only if it was feasible, technically feasible. I've reviewed a few of their proposals, and I don't think that the Chinese and Afghanistan has come to an agreement on the definition of feasibility yet.
I see. So the Chinese proposed to build something from INAC to Hariton, connecting it to the north through Hariton.
That was their proposal, but
that was their proposal, right?
Railroads and mountains are not the best friends in the world, so you would have to do a lot of tunnels in a seismically active country. So I think that there are some challenges in that plan.
Right, but in terms of how sort of vital, obviously, building a railway in any part of the world is an extraordinarily difficult challenge. I mean, we've read stories of how the railroad got built in the United States. Lots of difficulty, not only physical, but in terms of security, debts, attacks, and so on. All those seem to be sort of magnified in the case of Afghanistan. It's a very tough terrain. I can imagine just, you know, even keeping the Salang Pass open throughout the year is a huge challenge. So trying to build something through the mountains, connecting through the north, must be an enormous challenge. And on top of that, you have, you know, the rails are going to be lying in the open and are subject to all kinds of sabotage. And I'm assuming the workers who, you know, start working on these projects will be subject to attacks as well, right?
I think that you're correct in that there are a lot of challenges that they need to overcome, both in terms of security of building it, but then maintaining the rail line. And yes, we've seen this, you know, time and time again throughout the rest of the world too. So, you know, one of the mitigation techniques that we have suggested to Afghanistan is, as a line goes through a village or a certain area, that you need to get that village to embrace the rail line. So whether you're dropping off some coal in that village, so they're having something for a power generation facility, or some other commodity that village finds very useful, then you can have that village have a dog in the game and protect the line. But securing the line is going to be a challenge in this country. But I don't think it's insurmountable. I think it can be done. It's just going to, you know, you're going to have to be aware of everything and then, you know, take steps to mitigate it as best you can.
Right. So, I mean, when do you think the next section of the railway will be built? I mean, I see that there is plan, the 75 kilometers up and running in the north where it's relatively safe. But what is your expectation of when the next phase will get done? Or will work begin on the next phase?
Well, work has begun on the next phase in terms of a detailed engineering study. And, you know, they're looking at the soil types and, you know, where do you exactly cross the river because we're looking for certain embankment types of infrastructure. So work is started.
This is the line that's connecting Turkmenistan and Tajikistan. Is that the line now we're talking about?
That is correct.
Okay.
So anywhere from, you know, and unfortunately politics plays a large role in some of these projects, but I suspect that anywhere from 2 to 5 years from now, you'll see that line really become relevant or at least be completed and you know, traffic start and pass across that.
But is there any sort of an estimate for what that section will cost? Because I think the ADB told me that overall the 75 kilometers in the north connecting Mazar to Hyderabad, I think roughly was $170-something million, out of which the ADB did a grant of about $168 million or $67 million. Is there a figure like that for this section in the north connecting Turkmenistan and Tajikistan?
I have heard, although I have not seen it on a piece of paper, so please take it with that. I've heard up to $2 billion to build the line that comes from Akina, which is on the border of Afghanistan and Turkmenistan, down to Shabargan, which is where you have all oil and gas fields, over to Mazar-i-Sharif, and then up into Tajikistan.
$2 billion as in B with a Bravo, right?
B as in boy, yes, sir.
Right. And then what's the length of that railway, that section?
I don't know that off the top of my head. Look it up. I have a document in front of me, but I can certainly, I'll tell you what, I will email that information to you.
Sure, that'll be great. No problem. Obviously, the big question hanging over all of this is, you know, the question of the day, which everybody's wondering, when this do U.S. troops and international troops stay on beyond this year? And what does that mean for security and, you know, continued training and, aid and funding flowing into the country? Do you think that, obviously, I'm not going to ask you whether they're going to sign or not, but do you think that Afghanistan can actually get to a point of building and taking care of all of this in the absence, let's say, in the next 3 to 5 years of continued international troop presence? Is that something that you see them doing?
I do, and here's why. We're doing two steps as a team, as railroaders from the U.S. One, we're doing a little bit of short-term training to get their feet wet, to stand them up, to have some basic operational knowledge. And then the second part is building that systematic enduring training or a training system that Afghanistan will own. They can teach it through, you know, Kabul Polytech or any one of the schools that has. So once we finish developing this program, and I really expect it to be finished by the end of 2014, they're going to have a program that they can run in and they can sustain and they can build. So we'll have left a legacy with them to go forward.
So this is a program that your office is sort of helping set up through the Kabul Polytechnic?
What we're actually doing is we're developing the program. We're giving it to Asian Development Bank to bring to a vendor who will then finish developing the program and hand it off to Afghanistan. But we're identifying what needs to be taught based on, you know, what we assess the needs of Afghanistan to be.
And this is primarily focused on the sort of like the basics of operating, maintaining a rail network?
All the way from operating and maintaining to the actual business of railroading. How do you create revenue? You know, how do you charge? What are the different business models?
Right. Is there a role for, I know the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had some role, for example, in helping develop the telecom network in the country, in Afghanistan, by helping figure out, you know, how to lay fiber optic cables and planning for that and so on. And also in the case of roads, I think they had some role in developing the road network, the ring road and so on. Is there a role for the Army Corps in this particular area, in the area of developing the railway?
Oddly, the Army railroading soldiers are not part of the Corps of Engineers. We're actually part of the Transportation Corps.
You're from the Transportation Corps?
We are all from the Transportation Corps.
I see, okay.
But, you know, you bring up roads and rails and telecom. and gas lines, you know, one of the things that we're trying to convince Afghanistan to do is, in it happens in other countries, if you have a rail right away, you always see the signs that there's, you know, pipes underneath. Well, right. You know, companies use the right away to put the gas lines and the telecom lines underneath the railroad. So we're trying to convince Afghanistan to synchronize some of this. It's not going to happen in the near term, but we're hoping, you know, longer down the road that they can synchronize their efforts across the ministries for that.
I see. Is there any role for U.S. railroad companies to be involved in this project at all?
There could be if they were interested in bringing capital over here and becoming involved in it. Is there a role for them to just come over and take over operations? No. Is there a business opportunity for them? Yes.
So, but you have not seen any expression of interest or even is there a model? I mean, I think the model so far seems to be, you know, put the rail as sort of a part of the mineral extraction tenders and have take that revenue and generate that and then use that to build the railway. So in that process, is there any, do you see a role? I mean, is there any expression of interest from American companies to sort of participate in this process?
We haven't talked to any U.S. railroading corporations that have shown an interest. We've talked to quite a few European and CIS companies that are interested in coming in and operating, or at least having part of it or part of the training program to help develop it. But we haven't seen any Americans. But that doesn't surprise me. It's you know, the operations here in Afghanistan and in Southern Europe and Southwest Asia are a lot different than they are in the U.S. So I'm not surprised. I'm not concerned at all by that.
Right. We've covered a lot of ground. Is there any, I mean, one of the things I kept asking the minister and the officials that I met there was, okay, there are a lot of attacks on the road network. I mean, even I think just a couple of days ago, there were some stories in the Washington Post that showed the big sections of the Ring Road having blown up by the insurgents. And there isn't all that money in the treasury for Afghan government to sort of do the maintenance, not only routine maintenance, but to sort of fix these things that get blown up, which is obviously a much more expensive affair. How big a concern is that? For in the case of railway, I would imagine that if it costs a lot of money to sort of fix a section of a roadway that's blown up or damaged, then I would think that that cost is much more in the case of in the case of a railroad, right?
It would probably cost more, dependent on the, you know, level of damage. But what Afghanistan has chosen to do to mitigate the possibility of that is on that 75 kilometers of rail that you had an opportunity to observe, they have over 470 police officers stationed along that line in different guard posts.
470 police officers, wow, that's a good statistic, yeah.
You know, so they are really, you know, taking it serious and protecting the infrastructure that they do have. And so I think they've taken a right step in that direction, and I hope they continue that.
And is that, obviously, that's a very high ratio, right? I mean, I'm sure that difficult parts of the world, there are security people stationed along the railway in different, you know, other countries too, but this sounds like per kilometer, you have a couple lot of people just with guns just standing by making sure that the line doesn't get blown up.
It probably is a very high ratio compared to anywhere else in the world. But Afghanistan realizes what the rail means to them. You know, I don't know if you got an opportunity to stop by the port of Nabhabad there.
Yes, I did, in fact, yeah.
You know, they're bringing in over 4,000 rail cars a month in that place. You know, that's a significant number of rail cars. And that's a significant lot of, you know, primarily rice, wheat, and flour that they're bringing in there that they need. So they're serious about protecting this piece of infrastructure. you know, and if they protect it, you know, not only do you have the jobs for those 470-plus police officers, but then you have all the jobs for everybody related to the rail industry, especially all the individuals that are at Niyababad and are offloading the trains, like you've seen.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I was there. I saw them. I, in fact, spoke with a few of their offloading crew and the supervisor as well. And then when we spoke earlier, just briefly, you said you were coming, I mean, when we exchanged emails, rather, you said you were coming back and there have been some new developments. You were going to check with the embassy to see what those were. Is there anything on that front that you learned new about this project?
No, I was. It turns out they made it sound more exciting than it was. It was basically... it was a bit of a letdown to me, to tell you the truth. And I was like, well, that was pointless for pushing this off, this interview off. So I'm sorry in that regard.
No, that's all right.
They had gone to a meeting with the Afghan Rail Authority while Master Sergeant Hakey and I were up north with our soldiers. And they were catching us up with it. And, you know, we're getting ready to go over and have a meeting with the minister here in another week. So
right.
I wish I could say there was something exciting out of that meeting, but I was a bit let down by it, too.
Right. Just lastly, I was going to just slip my mind. So just wanted to understand that the importance and the role of the Railway Authority. I think, as I understand it, that investors and others who want to work with Afghanistan to develop the railway wanted this Railway Authority as an independent agency to oversee the construction maintenance. But if you can help me understand what exactly is the role of the Railway Authority and why that's so important, that would be useful.
Well, let me draw a... let me compare it to the United States Federal Railroad Authority or the Federal Aviation Authority. They create standards, and the standards will go across the country. So if I were to operate a locomotive in the Helmand province, it's going to be operated and loaded and maintained the same way it is up in some of the northern provinces. So as a rail car travels, through the country, there can be that same expectation of laws and regulations for operation and maintenance of it. It's also very important when you talk about interchanging with other countries, and that's a step that Afghanistan is working to take now is membership in OSJD. These are steps that are taken by this rail authority because then you have the rail authority sets the rules and regulations about the interchange. And membership in OSJD, gives you most of those requirements of what it's going to be. So when we load a rail car in Afghanistan, and it travels up into Uzbekistan or any of the other countries to the north of Afghanistan, that rail car is maintained and operated and loaded all in a very consistent way, so you have a very consistent operation through the entire rail system.
Okay. Right. And then how is the question of the gauge being addressed? I mean, we earlier on we spoke about the fact that there is a different gauge in the north, and the one in the west is different, and the one in the east is different. So Afghanistan has to choose what kind of a gauge it operates on. Is there any kind of a consensus on where that needs to be?
So we're recommending to Afghanistan that they maintain two different gauges for at least the near to midterm. And this is not without historical precedence. The United States for a very long time had three gauges in our railway system. So the reason that we're recommending two different gauges, a gauge changing station forces you to touch all the cargo again, which costs more and increase your shipping costs. So the countries in the northern part of Afghanistan, north of the Hindu Kush, are all the Russian gauge, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, or Uzbekistan, and Tajikistan. So as you build a line to connect all of them up there, it just makes sense to extend the Russian gauge or CIS gauge lines along that country. As that line goes down to Herat, you will have to have a gauge-changing station to go into Iran. The separate line that starts in the middle of Hindu Kush, Bamiyan, and works its way over to Kabul and then down to Kandahar and over to Helmand Province before dropping into Iran and down to the port of Chabahar, we recommended standard gauge. And the reason is you have a lot of traffic going through there, and you have a lot of different manufacturers, both in the United States and around the world, that make new standard gauge equipment, especially, you know, for mining operations, which is going to be the goal of their operation. So it allows you to connect with Iran. It also allows you to have a greater pool of countries and manufacturers where you can get new rail equipment for this rail line.
Right, right. Okay. Well, great. Is there anything else I should have asked you in this context?
I don't think so. I think we've covered everything. Afghanistan is, we are working on helping Afghanistan stand up on their own. You know, it's important that they become self-sustaining and they can continue to carry on this mission. And, you know, hopefully we leave a legacy behind where we helped jumpstart them. You know, big steps they have to take, membership in OSJD, finding ways to fund a lot of these long rail lines and integrate it into their extractive minerals industry. And then, of course, the training programs that we're creating for them. So I think we covered it all.
Right. The only one thing I think you said you might be able to email me would be the length of the railway and about that particular project that's still underway right now in terms of the technical work.
I agree. That's on my list of takeaways for you today.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much, Major. Appreciate it.